Member Week is here at Lowe's. Don't miss your chance to get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, tools, home essentials, and more. Shop our exclusive deals happening in-store and online now through July 18th. Not a rewards member? Join for free today and get ready to save more. Lowe's, we help you save. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
All of our shows require time and money to produce, involving many amazing people who we can't ask to work for free. We are free to listen to, however, on 99% of platforms, but we rely on commercials and Patreon for income. This means our free shows feature ads, and we thank you for supporting our sponsors when you can. Please note that some platforms place ads on our content after we've delivered it and keep the revenue, like Spotify. Additionally, there is no option for us to post ad-free versions of our show for Spotify Premium users, which means that those users may still hear one of our baked-in ads. That is out of our hands at the moment. There is a solution, though. You can get early, ad-free versions of Astonishing Legends, The Dead Letter Office, and other bonus content at patreon.com/astonishinglegends.
Astonishing Legends Network.
The views and opinions expressed by hosts and listeners on the Astonishing Dead Letter Office are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of Astonishing Legends Productions, the Astonishing Legends Network, or any affiliated entities or guests.
When something unexplainable happens to you, it can make you feel isolated or alone. But trust us, you're not. For over a decade, you've been sending your strange stories to Astonishing Legends. And now it's time for our fellow Legenders to hear them too. Join us weekly in Blanket Fortiana as we dig through your intriguing messages to the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
Tonight's episode, Gray's Walk in L.A.
Well, between the two of us, sir, we have probably spent a combined total of at least 4 decades of our individual lives in Los Angeles, I think.
Oh, yes. For good or bad, I've been there longer than I have in the town where I grew up, which shall remain still at this point nameless. But I got there right after college. I transferred down. Yeah. To go to USC, and that would have been 1986, 87.
Okay.
I think over the summer of 87. So, yeah, long time. And it well, and I know exactly where this story takes place.
Yeah, so do I. And I myself lived there from 94 to 2001 and moved away right after, as in 5 days after 9/11, and then went back and lived there from 2010 to like 2000, I don't know, 17, something like that. But so a lot of time there. We're the ancients, but for real, in that time, you and I have both seen a lot of strange stuff because LA, like New York, is one of those cities that, especially when you're younger, you're out and about in strange, unfamiliar places at all hours of the night. You see all kinds of wacky stuff.
You do, but I think what's interesting with LA compared to New York is the geographical compression. And and what I mean by that, that's actually a cinema term, speaking of film school, is that when you look at the movies, it's like, oh, here's Starsky and Hutch. Oh, take your favorite cop duo, and they're downtown busting some perps. And next thing you know, they're at the beach. And so I've had friends that have come visited. It's like, hey, we want to go do that. We got a car. We're going to go do this. It's like, can we take Wilshire from, downtown all the way to the beach? It's like, well, you can. I'm not sure you want to do that. It's going to be, no, it'll be fine. It's like, listen, I've lived here a while. I'm telling you, it's going to be a long drive. No, it'll be fine. We'll see the sights. It's like, okay, go ahead, knock yourselves out. And then I get I see them for dinner. Like, oh my God, that took forever. It took all day. It's like,
And
it's
also wasn't super rewarding.
No. I mean, there's terrific sections of Wilshire, but like, it's just, it's a very spread out. So when you're talking about seeing weird stuff, it's all over the place. And it's very happenstance, and you can get into trouble like any place else. And when people say, like, isn't it dangerous? It's like, well, like New York, Scott, you know where to avoid.
Yes.
And where not to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. In New York, I would say you see more weirdness. I've been there a handful of times, and it's like, it's more concentrated. It's all day long and all night long.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you could just like, oh, you want to see some weirdness? Go around the block there. LA, yeah. Oh, you want to see some weirdness? Yeah, it's a 15-minute drive, but go here. Yeah. It's like, you'll see something strange. So, in that case, it's a different vibe and feel, but like any big city, it's full of people, all with their various problems.
Yeah.
And their various dark secrets and hidden weirdnesses.
Yeah, that's true. And you and I both have stories that are not suitable for broadcast.
No,
but
true.
To my knowledge, neither one of us has had one like tonight's dead letter.
I can't say that I do, but I've seen many, many strange people. But I will say, I think you and I have felt lately that we're hearing more and more about things hiding in plain sight.
Yeah, not just UAP craft, but beings as well.
I was walking my dog late one night around 1 a.m. in mid-December in Los Angeles, La Brea and 3rd to be exact. The streets were pretty empty and practically zero traffic, as is the case in the lead up to Christmas. I noticed a homeless person standing motionless on the sidewalk ahead of me, which made me slightly nervous. I contemplated crossing the street to avoid them, but they didn't appear to be an overt threat, so I stayed my course. I kept my eyes on the ground ahead of me, and as I passed this person about 3 feet away, I turned my head to look, and to my utter astonishment, I saw the face of a gray alien staring back at me. I instantly averted my gaze back down to the pavement and felt a visceral chill to the bone. The appearance was a typical gray, but the skin was dark and ashy looking, like a black leather catcher's mitt that had faded with age. Speaking of a catcher's mitt, I later concluded it resembled the alien in the baseball episode of The X-Files titled The Unnatural. I told myself, "Renee, look back up and verify what you saw, or else you will regret it." I wondered in that moment, what if it's only a Halloween mask or those novelty alien bug-eyed sunglasses? So against every fiber of my being, I forced myself to look back up, and instead of a cold, slender, gray face of an alien, I saw a very round face of a middle-aged African-American woman with sad eyes. If it was a mask, there was literally no time to take it off without me noticing. The immediate impression I got was that this being was sick, and it didn't realize it had dropped its psychic mask and let me see its true self. So it threw up its human mask. I spent the next day or so questioning what I saw and contemplating all the ways that I may have duped myself. Some trick of the light as I approached this person. Some underlying paranoia. I have always had an interest in UFOs, love shows like Unsolved Mysteries, The X-Files, but I've never been paranoid or delusional about it or experienced anything close to this incident. I have seen some odd lights in the sky that I attributed to military operations at Edwards Air Force Base, but nothing I could claim was ET. I searched online for any other people who have had similar encounters, but I couldn't find anything. After some time, I felt 98% confident that what I saw was my imagination. But then I wondered if that is merely a self-defense mechanism that our brains rely on when we are confronted by something unnatural. What if it wasn't a trick of the eye? What if I saw exactly what I think I saw? As for my feeling that this creature was sick, I can't tell how much of that was my imagination or whether it was some sort of empathetic thought transfer. But I can tell you that feeling was immediate. I didn't feel physically threatened and my dog didn't react either. If it was indeed alien, I felt sorry for this creature, like it was living in hiding and in solitude. If there's any place on planet Earth for an alien to hide, the streets of Los Angeles are as good as any. Renee. After these messages, we'll be right back. And now, back to the show.
That was a really good letter. I enjoyed that letter. I like how it's presented and how it's written. Mm-hmm. I like how matter-of-fact she is about it. We've had stories where there was a dog. This dog apparently didn't factor didn't react. But it is interesting to me, this idea of you see something and you look back and it's different. And we've got all kinds of stories like that with from the invisible mantis creature on the river or whatever. But this idea of a mask, it's late at night. Maybe this being, if this is, you know, if you believe any of this at all, was just trying to relax or couldn't take the energy to keep up. The mask, both literally and figuratively.
Yeah, I love it. Well, you know where we heard this before? I ran this story by you because it was one of my picks, one of my finalists for our collection of Halloween listener stories. And so we held on to it. And I said, we got to tell this story at some point, or we're going to use this story for something. Because it's, I mean, obviously there are selfish reasons as well, because Scott and I know exactly where Third La Brea is. It's actually a big kind of a crossroads section of LA, their mid-city, Hollywood. And I used to work close to there.
Yeah, it's not far from the Grove.
But Third and La Brea, I've been there many, driven through many, many hundreds of times and know exactly where that is. And just the feel of it too, especially around the holidays, late at night, there's not a lot of activity. Again, not like Manhattan where, you know, there's always something going on. Except for Sunday mornings, which are weirdly quiet and peaceful because everyone's still in the club until it closes at 6 a.m. or they're rolling out and they're totally wrecked. So, the shopkeepers are spraying the streets down with water. It's kind of a peaceful thing as the sun's coming up. So anyway, but L.A. has a very specific vibe late at night. So the vibe is there. And then the subtleness of the story in that it's just a flash of a moment and you think you saw that, but I also understand that feeling too. It's like a lot of my little things that happen to me that are weird that you end up questioning yourself about later. And you always say like, oh, actually a lot's happened to you. It's like, yeah, I don't know though. It's like afterwards, it's like, maybe I did imagine that.
Right.
Because maybe that is a self-defense mechanism, as Renee says, that it keeps us going. So we're not, again, fearful and up all night being scared of this kind of thing in this encounter or wanting to go back and not have that experience again, because it's odd, but just that flash there. So what you were talking about is that I do believe that if you're thinking about it, to me, logistically, mechanically, how this would work, it's not so much like we see in the movies. Remember when morphing technology came out with special effects and movies and TV, and then it was all the rage and everyone was doing it in their stories and features. It's not so much the physical change in an instant of the face, but maybe your perception of it.
Right.
So as you walk by, you have perceived the defenses were down and this creature was sick or not feeling well or just off its game or just in an unguarded moment. And again, that must be physically exhausting to do that all the time. But it is your perception of that it's implanted into your head like a screen memory, right? It's kind of a things you walk by, nobody notices, because that signal is being beamed out from this being. And then for a moment it drops and you see what it really is. And then it notices you noticing and it's back up again.
Yeah.
And again, you wouldn't notice somebody like that. It's just very a common person on a common street. And you see that every day and you don't think twice about it. And so it's a good disguise, but how does that work? So rather than the flesh changing color, kind of octopus-like, for a moment, it's a little brain signal for you to see something else dropped and you saw what it really was. And in this case, so Renee, it's like, I know that episode well. It's one of my favorites just because of the setup. And also the baseball team was called the Grays. A little inside joke there, but it's got some guest appearances there. Daniel Duchovny as Piney. M. Emmett Walsh, we always love him.
Yes.
And I guess a younger before we know him, but I really love his acting. Jesse L. Martin as Josh Eggsley. So anyway, the idea is that there's somebody kind of hiding in plain sight and just functioning in society. And an episode, The Unnatural, and here they're just here. And if you're wondering, like, it's funny, some people do kind of have an opposite or skeptical view of this would say like, well, why would an alien be sick? I mean, they're much more advanced. And I thought that too. And then I remember talking to psychic medium Jim Hunt, who we've had on the show. It's like, do you think that there's like alien ghosts around? Like, I don't know. And he said, well, sure. If they're here, obviously by now, some have probably died and you're in this realm. And so your spirit could also be wandering around like humans. If you believe in ghosts, he certainly does. I believe in spirits and an afterlife. And he said, I think I've come across spirits psychically that were not of this planet, let's say. So you could call them alien. And it's like, if they're here, they're not perfect beings. Why wouldn't some be sick? Why wouldn't some not be functioning correctly, even if they were androids or biological creations? They're not all going to work perfectly. And there you go. Some was having a malfunction due to feeling bad. And I love that it's such a bit of a touching story as well, in that you felt sadness for this thing. Like, maybe it's on a mission. It's stranded here and it can't get back. And it's just sick and not feeling well. It doesn't want to be here.
And it can't catch a big break in movie, so it's having to wait tables.
It's trying to just get down to Melrose, where there's more shops and people.
Right.
You know, but no, it's an interesting little tale of just a fraction of a moment that lasts with people forever, especially with Renee. He's always going to be thinking about that. And I'm glad they looked up. I'm glad they turned around and gave it a second glance, because you would have regretted it.
Yeah.
And I don't think dogs always react to everything too. It's like, think about the laughing Indian, our friend Mark, right? His dog had no reaction to something he clearly heard.
Well, yeah, but there might be a difference between being an alien and being a threat. It could be like, I see the aliens all the time, but they don't scare me. That could be the dog's
point
of view.
That's what I'm saying, different things. And they may see ghosts all the time. And it's like, well, they don't really bother me. And it's like, but these ghosts I don't know. And then I see the ghost of grandma and I get excited.
Yeah.
And that also is, that was on a Jim Harrell's campfire. And I love, a lot of these are kind of touching stories, the dog reacting. I think it was at a funeral. And I always remember this because they would play this big goofy dog and, family dog. And they would do this thing where they would kind of squeeze his butt. They'd go, pinchy, pinchy. And he kind of dance around and get excited and hop up on you. And he loved it. And they were at a funeral and the grandmother passed, and suddenly they felt, I think they sensed a presence of like mom. And the dog started doing the pinchy pinchy dance.
Yeah.
Maybe she was doing it. And he was just like, hey, that's funny. That tickles. So anyway, but getting back to the story, this is fascinating in that they're obviously, if they're going to be here, I'm sure there's some walking around. And then if you go make the stretch to the alien human hybrid thing, is that I thought this was kind of funny and fascinating. One theory is that the hybrids are among us, but also being taken to populated urban areas like Disneyland to train in understanding and adapting to human behavior. And so it's not out in the remote woods or it's always at somebody's farm and some farmer seeing this stuff. They're all over the cities. And there's a presence there. You just don't notice it.
You know, it's funny. You talk about the morphing technology. That was invented by PDI. I don't know if you remember them. Pacific Data Images.
That's right. I certainly do.
Yeah, they did that for the 1991. The most prominent use of it was Michael Jackson's video for Black or White.
That's
if you haven't seen that. In fact, I saw clips from that making the rounds on Instagram just a week or so ago, because kids these days can't believe it's not AI. But it's not AI.
No, it's
technology that they developed for films like Willow and Terminator 2 at PDI. There's these powerhouse companies in LA that would just create something from nothing when it was needed for a big budget film back then.
Right. The other thing that kind of fascinates me is how no one really talks about music videos anymore. But back in our day, when MTV started, we had music videos. And the thing is, being serious here, is that they were pioneering a lot of technology film-wise, because you had great directors like Michel Gondry and others that were using the latest kind of visual techniques and special effects. I was thinking of Godley and Cream. Remember that video where they morphed all the people?
Well, yeah. And to be fair, by the way, Gondry was very much practical. He did almost nothing. He shot it like for real that way, but he did invent frozen time.
That's what I was thinking of. Just quickly for folks that wonder how that works, is that it's a great practical idea of, I think for the Rolling Stones music video, is that you take like 120 digital SLRs lined up on a track around something, and you basically all have them shoot a single frame. And then when you put those all together, it's like motion pictures, except you can go around a subject and it appears if they're frozen in time, frozen motion, hence. And so, that was all happening. And this, I wish there was a photo. Well, nobody has a GoPro going full time on your walks, but maybe you should. And would the camera even pick that up? Because then to my theory is that, would it just show the alien all the time? Or would you see the human there? It's a good question. Or would you just see some mist? Because that's our other theory. Remember, like sometimes cameras just pick up an unidentifiable, unintelligible fog or mist where we see something else, or we see black smoke, and then but we see a person.
That's like Max Kelso's story that we refer to frequently. He actually texted me today and was asking about Monster Fest 2025. He's like, I can't find anything on it. And it's like, yes, they're not doing it this year. Yeah. But yeah, where he, and in fact, I believe we ran Max's Junk Tour appearance on Patreon in our main feed, or we're about to. So if you haven't heard that, look for that. If you're subscribed to the show, you will have gotten it already by now anyway, probably. But what are other people, why aren't other people seeing it? Because maybe nobody's seeing her. Maybe it looks different to other people. Maybe it's invisible. Maybe it's a mist to someone else and it's only presenting itself to you. Maybe Renee has a gift that gave her an ability to observe this being, whatever it was, or maybe it allowed itself to be observed. Of course, the initial incident was she thought she saw this. And then praise to her for step two of looking again. Step three might have been going over and saying hello and finding out a little bit more about that person. But you know, it's easy for me to say. I'm walking around at 3rd and La Brea at 1 in the morning. Not sure I would have done it. So,
well, no, that gets to what we were saying before. I have noticed a change over the decades of being, I mean, it's always been the case, what we were just talking about. You don't want to draw unnecessary attention because oftentimes it's not good, or you're going to get dragged at least into a long story that is going to, you know, you try to be polite and trying to extricate yourself from. But certainly if somebody seems that they need help, you know, try and get them help. We'll get the authorities to get them help, certainly, if you see that. But not saying that to ignore people, but Scott and I know it's like you got to be careful because, like I said, I think in this case with the subject, you're probably okay, but there is a, I would say nowadays, there's a lot of violence that comes with this. So I would be careful with how you approach people. But in this case, I think I would have maybe tried to talk to them or just said hello, like, hey, how you doing? You're okay?
Yeah.
I'm just kind of reflecting on my course of seeing people on the street. But anyway, now getting back to this, it's like, I like the story for several elements just because, again, the tone, the sadness, the emotion to it. You don't often hear those aspects of it. Usually it's very threatening. You know, it's like they showed up as monkeys and I didn't want to go. And
now I'm
looking at this saw coming down from the ceiling, you know.
Yeah.
In this case, it's a very human touching moment with a non-human.
Of course, when you look at the possibilities for what may have happened here, whether Renee could have been mistaken or misread the situation, although she seems very sure of it and is very, in her story, very specific about how I know that this is what happened. And again, as we say on the show and on our main show, we're not going to tell you what you saw. We don't think that's a cool thing to do when people share stories with us. You have to wonder on a deeper level if this goes way beyond just being a mask. You have to wonder if there's some kind of coexistence happening within that being. Maybe it's way more complicated than anything we would understand. Or maybe Renee just mistook some light play and shadows and she saw that for a different reason and it wasn't how the person really appeared. But then that begs a new set of questions, which is really, why does she think she's seeing grays on the street?
Well, but I liked your idea, though, of some kind of cohabitation and not being able to wrap our heads around that. That's one philosophical thought experiment for me personally that I've always wondered about. And we've talked about this since we began the show, is that how we function is that we think we can understand everything. Like, look, we're adults. We've been to college. We can understand difficult concepts, most of them, or at least try to get a foothold about what a concept or some mechanics or how things work. But then there must be, look, it's like, I think it's hubris and ego to think like we understand everything. We just haven't discovered some things. There are things and the processes and ways of, I guess the, you know, reality works that we cannot comprehend. And motivations and thinking of other beings that are not human, and therefore we can't even wrap our heads around it. Of just, again, it's that cockroach, like, how do you explain yourself to a cockroach? What is a cockroach? What are they, you know, obviously, I think about this when flies or insects buzz right for you. Like, don't you see that I'm gonna swat at you?
Yeah.
Or I have this plastic tennis racket that's got a battery in it that's going to zap you. Like, there's no concept of that. I think you're maybe an animal to them or some large thing, but obviously not that dangerous because you're flying right at my face. again, that's instinctual. It's animal, it's insect. We can, as higher beings, hopefully, we can understand what's going on there, but can they understand what's happening with us, and does it matter? You know what I'm saying? It's not a level like, it's not even that important. I mean, there's a survival instinct, of course, but from our point of view, a really advanced being may be thinking in ways that we can't even comprehend and don't make sense to us. And so there's no logical way. We always try to do that, is apply logic to this. Like, well, that doesn't make sense. Why would they do that? It's like, you're trying to apply human logic to that? Like, don't, it's the hat in the can. Like, don't, it's a comedy joke. Don't try and unravel this thing. It's not going to make sense to you. And it's like, why would it? And I know that's how we comfort ourselves and get by in the world, is we try to make sense of things and see patterns. I think that's called apophenia, perhaps, post hoc ergo propter hoc, translating from the Latin, after this, therefore, because of this. So, well, that happens. So then this must be the cause of that, where it doesn't necessarily follow at all. But that's how we survive, is that, again, don't go in bear cave. You go in bear cave, you do not come out. So you know not to, you know, to be cautious and approach things. And so that's what keeps us safe. You see a strange being, don't engage, because you don't know where they're coming from. But why are they here? What are they thinking? How does that process work? It may be something, like you said, I thought it was interesting. It may be something we cannot understand. You need to be evolutionarily higher to understand it, because to us it seems cruel or unusual or nonsensical. But to them it makes perfect sense, and they have their own motivations.
Ooh, apophenia. That's a nice word. I think that was like a singer in the 80s.
Yeah,
apophenia. That's an interesting idea. The other thing I wonder about is, in this scenario, I'm not entirely certain that we're not the cockroaches. No offense, Renee, not saying that to you, but maybe the being is the elevated thing. But here's the other thing. Who says, and I don't know what this, there's probably a term for this too, but there's always this idea, we've talked about it before. It's like, well, a UFO is not going to crash. Their technology is so sophisticated. Everyone has this belief that if these things are real and you believe any of this at all, they've got it all dialed in. Everything works right. They've got the technology. Nothing ever goes wrong. Everything is perfect, and they're living their best lives as aliens or interlopers are doing, you know, and we're the lab rats, or we're the cockroaches, or we're the zoo. And they're coming down here and doing whatever they need to do, and they don't ever fall into the enclosure. But the thing is, if the universe works the way we think it does, Murphy's Law probably could apply across multiple dimensions, and it could apply to, this could be some sort of alien life form that is down on its luck or abandoned. And I always think about James Fox's movie and that poor creature, which is how I think of it, that was on the ground in Virginia and seemed scared and was crouching against the wall, like afraid for its life, and possibly completely out of luck in terms of existing too long beyond that moment after its ship crashed, and it's running around in a village on Earth where it had no intention of ever being.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking when you're discussing here James Fox's documentary, The Moment of Contact, and that it was described with the three girls that saw this thing in the field, and they go to the field where they saw it. It's locked up, but they get in there and just exactly where it was crouching. And I think about that, and that, you know, again, there's all these theories that what we're seeing, these little beings are manufactured androids of sorts, replicants done to do dirty work in the dangerous space travel business. And for cases like this, when they do crash, you don't want your upper echelon beings put in harm's way. You want them guiding these other beings. And we've certainly heard lots of stories where that seems to make more sense. You've created minions in a way. But do they have feelings that are maybe self-defense type things, where they can be afraid and can be cautious? It does seem to be, if you believe a lot of the abduction stories, when somebody like Travis Walton starts acting up and throwing punches, it's like, okay, we're out of the room. Okay, we'll just come back when we calm down. Okay, we'll see you in a minute. And there's some self-preservation aspects to these creatures, and you wonder, like, what are they feeling, though? On the other hand, if it is a manufactured being, it makes me think of the Simpsons episode with the robot. Things are going crazy in Professor Frink's laboratory, and the robot's on fire. It's like, why did you program me to feel pain? like, why did you, that's not helpful for me. Why is this thing crouching down? But it did sound afraid. It wasn't just running around like, I'm in control of you, puny earthlings. it had fear of its life, if you believe that. And it's on a strange place and a strange planet and a stranger in a strange land. And turned out to be a little toxic, I think, just by being what it was and the way it's engineered, if you believe the story. But in this case, it's like, getting back to the story, I do wonder, like, then what are the feelings? Because that's another aspect of why I like this story. So you're talking about the downed aircraft, and it's like, you know, they're not perfect. They make mistakes. Obviously, some things we don't understand that don't make sense to us. If you talk about Terry Lovelace's abduction experience, and he said, like, yeah, they didn't get everything right. Like, first of all, I could still move my eyes, just like in the Pascagoula case. They didn't get that right. I could still see you and move my eyes. And I remembered a lot of this, even though you tried to blank it out. So your biotech isn't totally up to snuff. Secondly, when you drop me off, my socks are on sideways and my boots are loose. And it's just like, that's the comical part of a horrific experience, in that it's like, the socks go on now, over boot, no, put sock on first, then boot. And then, why am I speaking monotone? But it's just like, it's on site. Who cares? Just get the socks on. We got to get out of here. Same thing with Betty's dress from Betty and Barney Hill. I think the dress, was it on backwards, or the zip was ripped, or something was wrong?
Yeah, it wasn't fastened right. Yeah, or it had been unfastened, like, in a sort of
something we've heard that before. The clothes are on inside out or on backwards. It's like, close enough. What do we care? It's like, it doesn't matter to them to get it perfect. It's not important to them. Like, just get the clothes on. We're out of here. We got five more people to abduct tonight. So let's get a move on. And to us, it's like, oh no, you're trying to commit the perfect crime. You get everything perfect so you would never notice. Like, no, they don't care about that, apparently. So here, though, like, what's the motivation? And you wonder, though, for me, about the fear and the sadness of being stranded and deserted, and like, who are these grubby people I got to walk around, you know, and pretend to be one.
Again, so, no offense to Renee. So far, we've called her a cockroach, a grubby person.
No, I'm talking, not Renee.
I'm making a joke.
Right. Not the people around or the subject that was seen. It's just the sense of isolation and, you know, being alone in a crowd. And that, again, it's a very human thing from something that may not have been human. Well, Renee, you know, there are folks that say there are things all around us that we can't see, not because of how our eyes work, but because of how our mind processes the input from our senses, which is just what we're talking about. You know, are these beings always out there? And if we can't see them, as you couldn't when you looked a second time, is that because of how our brains work or because of something they are doing? We might not learn that for quite some time, but thank you for having the courage and the openness to share your story with us here at the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
The Astonishing Dead Letter Office is hosted by Scott Philbrick and Faris Burgess and is executive produced by Tess Feifel. The show is edited and mixed by Sarah Voorhees-Wendell at VW Sound. The theme is based on the Astonishing Legends theme by Judson Crane at Founder Music, arranged by Alan Caricia, who composes all the other music in the show. Tommy Beaver Design created the logo. The announcer is John Bowler. That's me. Stories are lightly edited for length, content, and readability, but otherwise presented as they're sent to us. We're always looking for more dead letters, so if you have a story of your own you'd like to share, email it to deadletteroffice@astonishinglegends.com. Please include how you would like to be credited. First name only, first name last initial, anonymous, a pseudonym. Let us know. Due to the number of emails coming in, we often cannot respond, but we do read them all. No part of this show may be reproduced anywhere without permission. Copyright Astonishing Legends Productions.